Well, some of you are awake. I'm going to start off with a funny story. That might wake all of you up. Going to look this morning at marriage. A lot of us are involved in marriage. But hopefully all of us are happy that we're involved in marriage. And in light of this marriage situation that we're going to discuss this morning, I want to read this story to you. I'm not going to try and say off the top of my head. I might forget part of it. But this will illustrate that I think that there's just a little bit different between husbands and wives, between men and women. If you haven't noticed before, curious, when I found two black and white negatives in a drawer, I had them made into prints. I was very pleased to see that they were of a younger, slimmer me, taken on one of my first dates with my husband. When I showed him the photos, his face lit up. "Wow," he said with appreciation. "It's my old Plymouth." You know, I'm sorry. I do appreciate what the woman had to say about that. But, you know, I'd be delighted to see a picture of my old Camaro, too. You know, of course, Tracy wasn't around when I was driving that Camaro. But, you know, like I said, the marriage bond is strange because it's blending together two people that are completely different from one another. I mean, you know, I'm not just talking about gender here. I'm talking about the way that we think, the way that we act, the way that we are, etc., etc. You know, I can still remember back on May the 21st of 1994, Tracy and I got married. I can't remember if it was at 10 or 10:30 in the morning. I sure did like that morning wedding idea because we didn't have to fret so long during the day. But it was one of the happiest days of my life. I don't want anyone to ask Tracy if it was ditto for her. But I think we get along pretty well right now. You know, Jesus had a lot to say about marriage, about weddings, about men and women together. In Matthew chapter 19, in verses 1 through 3, he said, It came to pass when Jesus had finished these sayings, he departed from Galilee, came to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. Great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. Then the Pharisees also came to him, testing him, saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" You know, it's an interesting little statement that we read by the Pharisees there. They came to Jesus, and we understand that it was just to test him. They weren't really interested in what Jesus had to say, except to find out if what he taught harmonized with what the Old Testament law or Moses' law had to say about it. Jesus went on in verses 4 through 5. He answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female? And he said to them, 'For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.'" Now I want to use that verse 5 there. Jesus said, "For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." I want to look at that in a couple of different parts. First, the idea of leaving home. And Jesus said, "For this reason shall a man leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife." Now, I've got children that are all teenagers right now. Won't be long before one will be a young adult. You know, that makes me feel kind of old. And what my children have seen in Tracy and in me and how we've gotten along is the way that they think that husbands and wives are supposed to get along with one another. It's something that we as parents need to remember, that we're being examples to our sons and our daughters about how we want them to act once they find a spouse for themselves. You know, it's not something that I've had to confront yet, but maybe in the near future, there comes a time when apron strings have to be cut, when it's time to push the little baby bird out of the nest, so to speak, or maybe not the so little baby bird. It's just something that has to take place. It might be that a father doesn't want to get let go of his daughter, or a mother doesn't want to let go of her son. But this is something that's very important. You know, children grow up and they need to be sent out of the nest, so to speak. It's important that once children get out and establish a home of their own, that they aren't constantly looking back to mommy and daddy. Tracy and I, when we got married just down the road here in Laverne, we moved to Arkansas. I was in school there, and I got my first preaching job in Arkansas. And I think it was a good thing. We were 300 miles away from my family, and we were 700 miles away from her family. Now, we called our folks every so often, but we couldn't go run into mommy and daddy every time the two of us had a little spat. Not that we did. And that's so important for young people to understand. In our day and age, and especially now, we live in such an affluent society. We have a tendency to give our children almost everything that they want, if not everything. And so when a young couple runs into problems, maybe especially financially, then she might have a tendency to go to daddy, or he might have a tendency to go to mama to help him out, rather than the two of them working out this problem themselves. You know, we need to remember as parents, and they need to learn as children, that it's important for them to learn to live together, that they don't need to always run back to parents to solve all of their little problems. You know, it's important for us to teach our children also that just because, you know, I'm one of the greatest husbands in the world, it might be that you're not one of the greatest, gonna be one of the greatest husbands in the world. And you know, I don't need to compare, or I didn't need to compare Tracy to my mama. You know, this is something that young people need to learn. The second word that Jesus uses in this passage is the word cleaving. It's not a word that we use in this way very often. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, or the old King James reads, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife. Now, what does it mean to cleave? Like I said, it's not a word that we use very often in this situation at all anymore. Now, if we look at Mr. Webster, he gives his first definition, and this is the way we usually use it, to divide by a blow, as with an axe, or to split, to sever, or disunite. But his second definition is to adhere or cling to be faithful to. Now, this word cleave comes from a Greek word, kaleo is the word. And that word means to glue or weld together, okay? To adhere to attach oneself to unite with, or associate with. Now this is a word that Jesus used two times while he was here on earth in his Gospels. It might be kind of a surprise to you that that word is used here. He sent the 72 out on their mission trip, two by two, and in that passage he said, even the dust of your town that sticks to your feet, we wipe off against you. Now the dust that sticks to, that's that same word. It means to cleave. It means to join together so that you have to dust it off. It doesn't just fall off. Jesus in his parable of the prodigal son in Luke 15, he, that young man, went and hired himself out to a citizen in that country. When that young man hired himself out to the fella so that he could slop his hogs, that word hired out to comes from this Greek word kaleo. And so we need to remember that that's what it's supposed to be like. You know, we're instructed by God to stick together. But why? Well, think about it. There's always going to be somebody out there trying to split you up. Now, I'm not talking about old girlfriends or old boyfriends. I'm talking about Satan. And the one group of people that he is especially going to go after is young people, and especially young people that have just gotten married. If he can drive a wedge between the two of them, then he's accomplished something great in his eyes. I heard someone talk about marriage in this way one time, and I like the illustration, that Jesus is like a sun in the middle of our lives. and that we as husbands and wives, or even boyfriend and girlfriend, are in orbit around Jesus as our Son. And the closer we get to Jesus, guess what? The closer we get to each other. Now, the same illustration can be used for parents and children. We too orbit around Jesus, and the closer we get to Jesus, the closer we get to each other. We need to be devoted and committed to one another in marriage. Jesus taught if a kingdom's divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. We need to be united, or we're just going to flop. I don't remember where I heard this illustration the first time, but I remember using it in a Bible class when I was teaching in Burlington, Iowa. You've heard that marriage is supposed to be a 50-50 proposition. You know, she gives 50% and he gives 50%. But the illustration that I heard was that it needs to be a 60-40. You give 60% of the time and expect to receive back 40% of the time. Now, why? Well, if it's a 50-50, then you're going to think, well, I've given my 50%, and now I'm going to wait and let her give her 50%. But with a 60-40, you're always given that little bit extra. Now, I told you I used this when I was in Burlington, Iowa, and somebody told me, she said, oh, yeah, Dr. Phil said 90-10. And I thought, well, you know, I might be able to give 60%, but I don't think I can give 90%. So, you know, that was Dr. Phil. This is a little bit more. But like I said, if you're always giving and not expecting to receive, I think you're going to be happier than if you're always waiting for someone to help you out. The next word that Jesus doesn't use, but it's an illustration here, is that of blending. And it says that those two will become one flesh. You know, this is a coming together of two distinct personalities. You know, one thought that photograph of herself when she was nice and young and slender, and the other was the fella that loved that picture of his old Plymouth. You know, two different people, two different genders, two different mindsets, two different ways of thinking. Now, this doesn't mean that we're supposed to become clones of one another. You know, we're supposed to complement one another. I'm not talking about compliment with an I, although I imagine your wife or husband would appreciate a compliment. There are certain things that I can do in a marriage that Tracy either can't or won't do, and there are certain things that she does that I either can't or won't do. And you know, eventually maybe I learn some of those things that I won't do, and so that I can help out. We're supposed to complement one another. Martin Luther, the ancient writer, once said, "Let the wife make her husband glad to come home, and let him make her sorry to see him leave." You know, we need to remember that your marriage is supposed to be forever. It's supposed to be for the long haul. It might be that some differences crop up, but you don't have to make them permanent. You don't have to go ahead and act on them. Do your best to try and keep things together. Two wrongs don't make a right. We need to work a little bit harder and not be so apathetic about things. Number four, can love be commanded? Is love just an emotion? Is it more than just an emotion? If it's more than just an emotion, can you be commanded to love somebody? Jesus said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first great commandment. The second's like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Now, Jesus gave this as a command. We're supposed to love God with all our heart, soul, and mind. We're supposed to love our neighbor in the same way. Think about it for a second. We're supposed to love, we men, we're supposed to love our wives. And they are supposed to love us. In Ephesians chapter 5, verses 25 through 33, Paul wrote, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as the Lord does his church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, of his bones. For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Now, it was a whole bunch of different verses. There's 9 of them in there. But to sum them up, Paul commanded husbands to love their wives as much as they love themselves, as much as they love their own bodies, and as much as Jesus loved the church. Okay? Now, in Titus chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, Paul wrote to Titus and said, "As for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine, that the older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, in patience. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children." So their wives are given a command to love their husbands. You can disregard it, but the Bible tells us to love one another. Now, you think about it, there's that golden rule thing. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Okay? That's commanded. We're supposed to love people that much. We're also supposed to command, or we're commanded, to love our enemies. Now, if you're supposed to love your enemies, somebody who hates you, or someone that you think hates you, how much easier is it to love your spouse, your family, your children? Not just those in your family, but those outside the home, those who are neighbors and even enemies. Finally, we need to remember that there's no quick fix. You know, if a marriage starts to break down, it doesn't happen real quick. You know, it's sort of like, and I don't know that I've ever seen it except in movies, it's sort of like a dam busting open. You know, there's a little bitty crack to begin with, and then the crack gets a little bit bigger, and then a little bit bigger, and this doesn't happen, like I said, but over a period of time, it's the same way with a marriage. It starts with a little here, and just a little there, and then a little more here, and then it gets wider and wider until it's about to bust wide open. And we all need to remember something like this happens. We can't go to a psychologist, psychiatrist, counselor, therapist, or whatever, and expect them to fix something that's taken a year or more to break down in 2 or 3 one-hour sessions. It's going to take a long time. You know, that's just the way it goes. But we've got to remember that if we do allow something to happen that severs the bond between husband and wife, what Jesus taught in Luke 16, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced from her husband commits adultery. And of course, there is an exception, and that is for unfaithfulness. Jesus taught in Matthew 5, "I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery." You know, we need to remember in closing that when the knot begins to slip, that what ties us together is not working anymore, that we need to take drastic measures to keep things going. In the Old Testament book of Malachi, Malachi's last written book in the Old Testament, you know, we've got 3 verses in there that Malachi, inspired by the Holy Spirit, put down on paper. In Malachi 2, verses 14 through 16, "Yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant. But did he not make them one, having a remnant of the Spirit? And why one? He seeks godly offspring. Therefore take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously with the wife of his youth. For the Lord God of Israel says that he hates divorce, for it covers one's garment with violence, says the Lord of hosts. Therefore take heed to your spirit, that you do not deal treacherously." It's a covenant when you stand before a preacher or a JP or whatever, and you pronounce your I do's, you're making a covenant promise to someone before witnesses and also before God that you're going to stick together regardless of what happens. In the Old Testament, one more time, just a quick illustration in Deuteronomy chapter 24. Moses gave this command. Of course, it came from God that marriage was so important that a young man was supposed to take off from work and from battle for a year just to get to know his wife. When a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war or be charged with any business. He shall be free at home 1 year and bring happiness to his wife whom he has taken. And it's that important for a young man and a young woman to get together, to get to know one another, so that as the years play out into decades and eventually children come and careers change and such like, they'll be able to stick together. You know, I was given a lesson a couple of weeks ago by a couple right here in this congregation who were holding hands. They've only been married a short amount of time. It's something that I like to make the excuse. Tracy and I used to hold hands till the children came along, and we have to carry them along in car carriers. Well, guess what? Yeah, none of them fit in car carriers anymore. And yet I don't hold her hand as much as I did when we were dating. If you can remember back to when you were dating, the devotion and the love that you had for him or her, maybe you need to have that same kind of devotion and love for him or her now, and maybe you need to go a little bit farther out of your way that you have been, and maybe this has been a, eye-opening experience for me too. If you're not a child of God, if you need to put on Jesus' water baptism, then you need to come now. If you're having problems with your marriage and you need the prayers of the saints, then won't you come now? We'll pray for you. We'll work with you. We'll do anything we can for you. If you need to respond, won't you, as we stand and sing?
If that-